Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you big book study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Wilsonville, Oregon. Today is Tuesday, March 26, 2019, and this is a 10 a.m. Eastern Time big book study meeting. Today we are reading from the big book and we're in Bill's story, the chapter Bill's story on page 15. We're going to be focusing our discussion on paragraph one today, and it starts with my wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm and ends with living that works in rough going. Today's readers are Stephanie L., the 12 steps, Kelly F. for the 12 traditions, and reading the text today in support is Wendy B., John K., and Kathy Jo P. The reference numbers for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12700, 12,700, and that would be for Monday, March 25th, 2019. And then the meeting today that already happened this morning, which would be Tuesday, March 26th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting, that share ID is 12702, 12,702. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At the Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Stephanie L. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, everyone. It's Stephanie L., and I'm a compulsive overeater in Southern California. 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me, Melanie? Mm-hmm. I was talking away. Hi, everyone. It's Stephanie L. I'm
we heard you the whole time.
Southern California. Oh, you did? Okay. I thought I heard
yes.
you say hello.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No. Well, then I'll pick it back up at three. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Pass.
Thank you, Stephanie L. I will now ask Kelly F. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Kelly F., compulsive overeater from Southern California. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of monies, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. OA group. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thank you, Kelly F. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers, should be muted. And this would include not soft muting on your own phone, but rather pressing star 1, please, so it doesn't interfere with the recording. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 15 in Bill's story, reading paragraph 1, which starts with "My wife and I abandon ourselves" and ends with "Living that works in rough going." We're going to unpack that one paragraph today. So I would like to ask Wendy B. to begin this study today by reading that paragraph and commenting. Hi, Wendy.
Yeah, hi. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. So my wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problem. It was fortunate for my old business associates to remain skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. And many times I've gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It's a design for living that works in rough going. And so where it said, it was fortunate for my old business associates to remain skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. And this just reminds me of how we can learn to match calamity with serenity. And I heard it said on the earlier meeting that sometimes we don't know what's best for us, and sometimes the seemingly terrible things that happen are often God working in our lives. And I'm sure Bill was, you know, experiencing fear, you know, as his time without work just drew on and on. And, you know, when I first came into recovery, I got fired from a job, and I was very insecure about my future, you know. I had all my hopes planted in that job succeeding, you know, instead of in God. And, you know, as it turned out, God had a different career planned for me, you know, a career in caregiving where I get to serve others all day long. And God did the miracle change in me to change me from a selfish individual working behind a computer with no thought of others to a hands-on job of doing for others what they can't do themselves. And I'm loving it. You know, I got caregiver of the month last month, you know, just because I've learned how to let God's love flow through me to others. You know, and it says where He was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. You know, and he was recovered, but he still had feelings to work through. You know, and I get plagued by waves of insecurity. You know, I hear on the meeting, you know, that when I feel insecure, to go within. And that was life-changing for me, to find a sense of God within me, you know, to bring me security. You know, and I heard on the first meeting so much wisdom and sharing on working with others, you know, how it reinforces everything I've learned when I share it with others. And being on this line, you know, is pretty intimidating. You know, I fall into comparing that I'm not good enough, you know, compared to all the wisdom and the insight I hear shared. You know, but God has shown me we're all just unique puzzle pieces fitting together to make a big picture, you know, and my piece is no less valuable than anyone else's, you know, and when I share with others, I just have to share my experience, and it takes all the pressure off of wanting to appear perfect, you know, I get to be vulnerable and share what's really going on with me. And when others can identify with me and I can identify with them and validate what they're going through, and I can be a safe place for them to expose themselves, you know, it's a beautiful experience. You know, I'm no longer alone. You know, it's so gratifying meeting our deep needs for being in community, you know, of sharing with each other. And just this really is a design for living that works. And that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Wendy B. Now it's open for everyone that would like to comment. On the paragraph 1, page 15, my wife and I abandon ourselves to, and that ends with living that works in rough going. So if you would speak up good and loud, and I can get your name down here.
Catherine.
Catherine C.
Alicia P.
Alicia P.
Jaina M.
Jaina.
Mary H.
M. Mary H.
Kathy L.
Kathy L.
Laura T.
Laura T. Let's go with that. That's a good start with things. So I have Catherine C., Alicia P., Jaina M., Mary H., Kathy L., and Laura T. Hi, Catherine. You're up first, and then Alicia will come after you.
Hi, Melanie. This is Catherine C. from Virginia. What I got out of these paragraphs is the idea that my self-centeredness is only removed when I let God remove it, and that begins with the steps. Bill had to go through the steps in order to have this transformation of wanting to give it away. And I have definitely had the experiences of trying to be of service and trying to be helpful while in disease. I remember I was told once, well, why don't you go out and help people? That will get you out of your disease. And so I did. I went to work with AIDS patients. I went to Haiti. I did all these trips. But all I remember from those times is when working with in this mission house is sweeping the floor and thinking about how many calories I'm burning. I wasn't thinking about the people there. Or going to Haiti and waking up at 5 a.m. so I could go for a run in Haiti to make sure I burned enough calories, and then finding ways to binge in Haiti. So the idea that I have to go through the steps in order for God to relieve me of my self-centeredness, because I had good intentions when going on those trips, but I can't remove my self-centeredness, and only God can. And right now in my life, I'm in college. And I have to say, college is probably the number one place, and I've heard this many times, of I can make it all about me. Everything is about Catherine, everything. And I am just so blessed by this program that I am able to realize that the days that I give and the days I get out of self are the best. And God is slowly pruning me and showing me and pruning away my self-centeredness, because I can't remove it. I can't remove it. And I'm just noticing with each passing day, God is removing a little bit more, a little bit more. And by getting out of self, and I'm now sponsoring, I want to sponsor, and I'm able to do all these things I wasn't able to do before because I couldn't do it. And God is just slowly removing Catherine from Catherine. And I'm just so grateful for this program. And I'm so just the only way to find God is by giving of self and death of self for successful living. And thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Catherine C. Alicia P., then Jana will follow you.
It's a pleasure to get to share today on this morning meeting. I could actually piggyback on what was said earlier. I think the main way of overcoming this disease is to get outside of self, which that's actually why higher power instructed me to get on this meeting this morning and to share, because I am very much so a person that will jump on and just listen to all you guys' experience, strength, and hope, and not add mine. And today I had a wonderful wake-up call by God, because I knew that I was headed back down the wrong path. You know, I am sponsoring one person, but I would love to sponsor more. I have a few sponsees, but they don't really contact me as much. And so it's just amazing how much I need them as much as they need me. I am an available sponsor. I struggle with bulimia. Honestly, I can struggle with anorexia, bulimia, or the binge and eating. So if there's anybody that kind of balances or goes between all three, just give me a call. I can definitely help you. One of the biggest things that God is really helping me with today is, again, like being of service. I just noticed that being of service helps me to get outside of my worries. It helps me to get outside the events of the day. And it's just so amazing, because one of my biggest character defects is just control. I control. I run on self-will. But the thing is, the big book tells us we are self-will ran riots. That's at the very core of our disease, is self-will. And so it's just so beautiful what the program has done for me today, because I woke up and I immediately knew I was already planning my day, which I know now also that whatever I plan doesn't mean it's going to happen. I have to be ready for unforeseen things that come in and take over, and be okay with being surrendered with what higher power has me to want to do. And now I'm able to do that. But I just knew this morning I woke up and I was like, okay, I'm sore. I need to go to the gym. You know, I'm going to cure myself and I'm going to make myself feel better. But it was just amazing, because I was able to actually turn that over and really engage with my mother this morning in conversation, because now I'm able to actually listen to people when they talk. That's something I couldn't do before program, because I was too focused on, you know, what I was going to eat next, what I was not going to eat next, or, yeah, you know, the list goes on. But now I'm able to have actual conversations with people, so I was able to do that this morning, you know, listen to some encouraging music, journaling, doing a lot of writing has helped. And so, therefore, this morning I actually went over and booked and read over all the days I had good days. Did you say time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, sorry about that. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Alicia. Jana M., you're next, and then Mary H. will follow you.
Good morning, visionaries. I am Jana M., a compulsive overeater in Phoenix, Arizona. And so it is a design for living that works in rough going. I just love that line. So simple, so clear. You know, when I was when I was in school, I learned that 2 + 2 = 4. And when I came into program, I thought, you know, intention plus effort would equal results. I had a very clear idea when I entered back into, like, proper recovery a little over a year ago that, you know, if I went to so many meetings, if I read so many pages a day, if I did so many journal entries, if I did a 90 and 90, if I made so many outreach calls, that this was all going to translate into the more of it I did, the better I would feel. The more of it I did, the better I would feel. And I was really, really surprised when that was not the case, because for a period of time, as I was going through the death of ego, the exact opposite was true. It was like the more I did, you know, the more I saw what a mess I was, the more unmanageable I was able to see my life had become, the more I wanted to isolate. And I'm, you know, isolation is a huge part of my disease. My disease wants to separate me, segregate me, draw the shades, and just be in a dark room with bags of things. So, but, you know, I kept coming back. I worked with others. My sponsor just threw everything, you know, helped me find, you know, a common thread that could run through everything. So that now at this point, I actually am starting to feel like I am who I am again. I am actually starting to feel like myself, you know, and that's aside from the, you know, the 60-pound weight loss and different clothes I have to buy and the physical recovery, which is all great. But, you know, I did that before many times in my life, and I was just an emotional hot mess. And now I'm actually feeling like myself again, and working with others is what saves the day. It is a design that for living that works in rough going, and just staying out of the isolation and with people who get it, who speak the language of the heart, who've been where I've been, who are trying to go where I'm trying to get. This is absolutely the most crucial part of my program, and is absolutely the most crucial part of me having the degree of success that I have, which I've never had before in my attempts to recover. So, yeah, can't emphasize the importance of that enough. Thank you so much for letting me share. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Jana M. Mary A.
Yeah, I have a super quick question. Are we able to offer numbers now, or do we need to wait to the end?
Wait to the end, please. You wouldn't want to have it recorded, I don't think.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Okay, back to business. Mary H., you're next, and then Kathy L. will come after you.
Hi, this is Mary H., recovered in Wisconsin. Can you hear me?
I can. I'll let you know.
Great, thanks, Mel. Thanks for your service. Thanks for everybody doing service this morning. It's great to be a part of the group with little babies. I don't always get to get onto the line as much as I really want to. I love this paragraph. There are so many places in Bill's story and really throughout the book that make me think of Bill, where he's doing, like, he's walking the walk and he's not feeling good. And I think that's so comforting to me, because there is something really, really old and hardwired in me that says that not feeling good is unacceptable, you know, and I see, you know, more onion layers are coming off, more inventory, more, you know, and the awareness, you know, self-knowledge is not the answer, right? But it is comforting to see that, like, yeah, there was a very small child that was me who felt terrible and didn't really have ways to explain it or cope with it. And now as an adult, you know, I get to set my feet on the path that really goes somewhere and use this design for a living that really works in rough going. And so it's just such a good reminder that just because I work the steps, just because I get recovered, just because whatever the status, whatever the milestone, however many days, however many months, however many years that I think that I have that matters for X or Y reason, that, you know what, life is still life and I'm still growing. And if I'm not growing, then I'm dying. You know, faith without works is dead if we don't apply ourselves to this one day at a time, not perfectly, but precisely. You know, if we don't do that, then we will die. You know, I will die in this disease, whether that manifests as a physical problem or a mental problem, because this is a spiritual malady. And so it's not always going to look the same way. But I'm just so grateful that, you know, even Bill, as he's recovered, as he's doing the stuff, and as he's learning how to live this way of life, he's plagued with waves of self-pity, you know, and that happens to me. And it's so great to be able to point myself and my sponsees to this book and just be like, look, it's okay. We just keep walking. We keep walking. We keep moving a muscle. As my sponsor would say, we keep moving the muscle. We practice these principles. Practice means that we just do it. We just do it every day to our best. So grateful to be just another bozo on the bus. I don't need to be like special. I don't need to have gained a certain status. Thank you so much to belong here and to be recovered today and to see these amazing changes in my life, even on days when I don't feel good. So I'll keep coming back. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary H. Kathy L., you're next, and then Laura T. will come after
Hi.
You, and then we'll open up the lines again. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. This is Kathy L. I live in Southern California, although I'm from New York originally, which is what you hear in my voice. It's great to be here. This is maybe my second phone meeting ever, and it makes me like nervous to share. It feels like I'm sharing, like, you know, I don't see people's faces, so it's a little strange for me. But I'm willing to get used to this because it's a great way for me to fit in another meeting during the week. I feel that I'm really in that same place now. I'm in a place of great discomfort, raising a 15-year-old girl and with a husband who doesn't understand that he's depressed. And it's a lot, I say, to handle, but I think the important thing here is that I'm not supposed to handle it. I'm supposed to surrender. And I think that the more I try to manage things, the harder they become. I consider myself a real fixer of problems, and I'm dealing with problems that I can't fix right now. And yesterday I did something that I don't normally do. I called a newcomer, and it felt so good, and she called me back, and I felt that I did a service, and I gave somebody a bright spot in the day, and then she in turn gave me back a bright spot in my day. And it just felt very effortless in a way to do that. It was it wasn't necessarily an easy thing to do, but it was a very simple thing to do, just to call a newcomer. And it felt good, felt so good. Today I have a very busy day, and I'm already in my head about how it's going to go. I'm busy from morning until very late at night tonight. And I need to just stay in the moment, and things might come into my day that I didn't anticipate. And I want to be present enough to be available, to be of service, to do whatever I need to do at the moment, at any given moment today. So today I surrender, and leaving myself open to the magic that can happen today. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Kathy L., and welcome to this meeting.
Thank you.
Before we invite Laura T. on the line, I want to let folks know that we are in the big book. In Bill's story, that chapter on page 15, focusing our discussion on that single paragraph one, my wife and I abandoned ourselves, and it ends with living that works in rough going, focusing our discussion there today. And after Laura, we'll take a few more names. Laura T., it's your turn. You're up. Thank you for waiting.
You bet. Thank you so much. And thank you for this meeting and your service and to all who are on the line. So it says here he was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. You know, Bill's story is talking about all of his struggles at the different times in his recovery. And it doesn't matter how much time we have, because we know that if we are the chronic type, as the Big Book talks about, the chronic types in which our mind will always return to compulsive eating when we're not working our program, that little piece of, well, not little, but that one piece that is key and pivotal is working with others when all else has failed, you know. And it says that it's nearly driven him back to drink, that resentment and self-pity, because again, the big book talks about that resentment is the number one offender that will bring us back. So we do have tools for that. We can do our 10 steps throughout the day. We can do our nightly inventories. We can do prayer meditation in the morning. All of those things are key components. And if we are the chronic types, and I found this in my case too, it almost drove me back to the food when I am not reaching out and doing wind-up work specifically. So it says he's gone to his old hospital in despair. That is what we call wind-up work. That's going to where compulsive eaters wind up, right? So sending out flyers with information about our program, or, you know, offering to give our information to doctors or dentists or, you know, colleges where people might be seeking help. And so that was Bill's experience, and that's what we follow those precise instructions if we want what he has. And that's been definitely my experience in this program too, that working with others saves the day. And the beautiful thing about it is we don't know, we're not in control of the outcome. We don't know when we might plant a seed. You know, I've gotten calls from newcomers months after I've reached out. So our job is not to determine the outcome. Our job is to simply do the next right step and ask God how we can be a maximum service and to be willing to do that. So again, my name is Laura T. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura T. The lines are open now for additional folks to comment on that paragraph. Paragraph 1, page 15 in your big book.
Mo A.
Rowena W.
John K.
Hi, Mo and Rowena and John.
Sherry K. B.
Donna B.
Sherry K. B. And Donna B., did you say?
Yes.
Donna
Becca
B.
R.
Okay. Becca R., that's it.
Judith R.
Great. Judith, we'll see if we can get you, but time may run out, so you hang tight. So we have Mo H., Rowena K., John K., Sherry K. B., Donna B., Becca R., and perhaps Judith. So good morning to you, Mo.
Yeah, good morning, Melanie. My name is Mo H., recovered compulsive eater, living in Walnut Creek, California, and thank you very much for your service, Melanie, and all those giving service today and other days on this line to make this wonderful meeting work that has saved my butt. I want to point out in this paragraph that these are the lows of the program, of Bill's program, and on the exact opposite side of the page, this was pointed out to me, I didn't figure it out myself, by my sponsor, that there are highs. So we have lows and highs. On the exact opposite side of the page, he says, a sense of victory. He felt lifted up, you know, that he was on the mountaintop. And so there's all these wonderfuls, and then he has these lows, you know, plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment, which sometimes nearly drove him back to drink when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic. And my story, some of you know it, that I was kind of flat on my back for 5 months from July to November, and in a lot of pain. And I would make outreach calls and ask people, how do you work your program when you're in chronic pain? And what I would hear back from many, many people is give service. And it was very interesting. It would piss me off, but then I would do it. It was easy to make phone calls from the back, laying on my back position. And I wouldn't talk about my problem. I would talk to them about their program and how their program was working. And the fascinating thing about that is the pain didn't stop, but I wasn't focused on it as much. And it was absolutely a miracle. And, you know, the idea to go back to food wasn't there. I had made a commitment to myself that I was not going to go back to the food over this pain, because then I would have two problems when I got better. Hopefully that I got better. But I'll tell you, this wonderful big book, and I love it, working line by line every day with you guys and learning something new each day, is a design for living that really works in rough going. When things get tough, work your program even harder. And with that, I'll pass, Melanie. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mo. That's Mo H. Next is Rowena K, and then John K will come after Rowena. Hi, Rowena. Star one.
Hi, this is Rowena K, recovering compulsive eater. I'm really glad to read this passage today because I'm back from relapse. I had a relapse about 2 weeks ago, and this is the first time I've been on the meeting or sharing since then. And what strikes me about this paragraph is that he says he and his wife abandoned themselves with enthusiasm. You know, so he's, to my mind, saying that, you know, he didn't sort of work half-heartedly with people. It was enthusiastic and was abandoned. And I can't say that in the past when I have worked with people that I've had either of those things. But it's really inspirational to hear that that's how he did it, you know, with enthusiasm. And the other thing I like about this paragraph is that it's, you know, the difference between what he's doing now compared to what he was doing just a few, just before, was that he was isolating before. And it reminds me of the paragraph where he talks about, you know, leaving a bottle of gin at the top of his wife's bed, I mean his bed, and because he was staying at home and isolating. And I guess that really resonates with me because that's what I do, left to my own devices, is I isolate. And I still do that now, but I am making more of an effort to not do that. And it really does help. And I guess the last part is where it says it's a design for living that works in rough going. And that's the thing for me, when I get into rough going, like I did recently, I think I'm in self-will then, and I find it very difficult to actually connect with my program in those times. I mean, they are quite extreme times because of the job I do, and it's just a full-on non-stop job. And the thing is, it's not that I couldn't do it, but yeah, I guess I just don't have enough recovery to do that when I really, really need to. And also, it's about surrender because there's, you know, and honesty as well, because part of the other thing that, you know, that I relapsed was that I was using other drugs, over-the-counter drugs, which, you know, took me back into the food. But I've learned a new level of surrender with that. And so, you know, I can turn to my higher power if I really want to when the going gets rough. And I'm going to pause there. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Rowena. John K., you're next, and then Sherry KB.
Good morning, Melanie. This is John Kernan, recovered compulsive eater in Southern California. You know, when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. You know, I remember when I first came into my first program, you know, I heard Dr. Bob's prescription, you know, trust God, clean house, help another alcoholic, or in this case, another compulsive eater, you know. You know, this is a disease of self, you know, left to my own devices. I'll spend all my time thinking about myself. And also what I learned from my family of origin is if you're going to spend time thinking about yourself, think about and obsess about your problems, you know, and think about, you know, who's the first person who recognized this and, you know, as an alcoholic, Bill, right? You know, he says right here, plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment, you know, and it just reminds me of me. You know, there's a lady I really love here in Southern California who always says, I may not be much, but I'm all I think about, you know. And that's the whole idea about getting out of yourself. You know, and he says, on talking to a man there, I will be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. You know, I think that's why meetings are so important. Meetings work, you know, we lose the isolation, you know, more than I think almost any other disease that's treated with 12-step recovery. Compulsive eating has such a huge isolation component, you know, a lot of us would go eat with others at restaurants, but I'll tell you, if you were like me, you were a wonderful example of moderate eating as long as you were in front of other people. But boy, I'll tell you, as soon as I got home, watch out, you know, when I'm by myself. And even if I put the food down, if I'm by myself too much, I can still get into binging, but it's just binging on my emotions, binging on self-obsession, binging on, you know, my problems. And again, that's why I think getting out into meetings, or, you know, I like to recommend face-to-face meetings unless you don't have the ability to get to any, because it gives perspective, you know. And, you know, I can come to a meeting just obsessed on the problems I'm having and, oh, poor me. And then I hear, oh, you know, I just got diagnosed with cancer, but I'm not going to eat over it. Oh, my family pet of 20 years just died, but I'm not going to eat over it, or this, and I'm not going to eat over it. And it's just, it helps. There's almost like a group strength that happens in a situation like that. Now, it's not to say my pain isn't my pain, but it helps get things in perspective. You know, that old line they have about, if we could all take our problems and throw them into a pile with other people's problems, we'd all take our own back, because, you know, we all of a sudden realize and get it perspective. And I also think that's why sponsoring is so important. You know, I'm helping myself when I'm sponsoring, you know, and that's not just a Pollyanna thing people say. I can't tell you how many times I spent time talking with a sponsee about something.
Time.
And then when I hung up the phone, I would hang up the phone and say, okay, do you hear what you just told him? You know, and remember, I was always told, if I'm having a problem, pick up the phone and call somebody, but say, how are you doing? And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Don K. Sherry KB, you're up. Then Donna B will follow you.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. Thanks so much for your service, Melanie, and everybody on the line, and welcome newcomers. And, you know, this book is just so divinely inspired, because, you know, once we put the food down, we get in the step work and we work the steps. You know, a lot of people think, click your heels, we're done. You know, pixie dust, rainbows, unicorns, puppies, and kitties. And, you know, life is still going to happen. And so, you know, I need a design for living that works in rough goings. That's what it says. And my design for living is working with others, helping others. And, you know, I've, like a lot of us on the line, I've gone through a lot of stuff, and I've had total chaos in my house at times. And, you know, I know when a sponsee is going to call, and I pick up that phone and we get in the big book. And you know what? God relieves me of the stress and whatever else is going on. And that's what's so important, is because, you know, just because we're recovered doesn't mean we don't have problems. We absolutely do. And it's just, this is a design for living that works in rough goings. And, you know, we still are going to be in selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid, but we have tools to work with our steps, 10, 11, and 12, to get us out of that. Plus, what I was referred to also is on page 133, paragraphs 1 and 2. I don't have time to read all of it. The bottom line is that it says that, you know, we're still going to have problems. We recover, but it's not an overnight matter. And, you know, we still have to address some of our thinking and depression. It's not going to vanish right away. And so we have to work at that. And they talk about doctors and psychologists. You know, if that's what we need, then we do that. And we do not hesitate to take our problems to such people. And so, you know, some of us need that, and some of us don't. And so we've got answers in this book constantly. We're being reminded constantly. What I was told was Bill was a really good writer. He didn't believe in repeating certain words the same way all the time. So a lot of things that are said in this book are repeated over and over again, but just worded differently, so that we can, you know, get it. And I remember even reading when he and his wife were off on a motorcycle going to, you know, for the lunacy commission, by doing all the going cross country to get all the stuff done. And that's when he was in his disease. And now he's recovered self, and he and his wife are wanting to help others, because that is what helps in rough goings, is to be of service to other people. And it gets me out of myself. And God gets in there and heals that part of myself that is disturbed. And I believe in that so much, working with others, doing a 10th step, doing an 11th step, you know, being of maximum service. That is the reason for me having the disease that I do have, because I can turn this around with God's help. And I'm so grateful for it. And that I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry KB. Donna B., you're next. And then Becca R. will come after you.
Hi, this is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling in from Denver. I too wanted to comment on just how amazing it is that on page 14, Bill was lifted up, a great clean wind of mountaintop blew through and through. I mean, he was at the top of the mountain, and in less than a page, he finds himself not too well and plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. And I've always been amazed by how it's less than a page later that living life on life's terms shows up for Bill. I also want to comment on this abandoning ourselves with enthusiasm to helping other alcoholics. I have an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old, and my daughter said to me, it seems to me like your program takes up a lot of time and that you're really busy, you know, working your program. Doesn't it get to be too time-consuming, or wouldn't you rather be doing something fun? And I've talked to the kids and told them that when I was living in active disease, it was significantly more time-consuming than living in the action that it takes to experience recovery. And also that what may look like hard labor to them is actually a pleasure to me. I'm grateful that my husband, who is not in the room, does not have any addiction, has agreed with me in living my program out loud in my family. I have sponsees come and go, and the kids know them and get to know them over time. The kids have been introduced to my sponsors and get to know them over time. They're aware of my outreach calls, and they see me pray in the morning on my knees. And it feels very natural in my home to live this program out loud, to allow the people who I love and who love me to witness my enthusiasm in helping others and my commitment in taking the actions required so that I may have the opportunity to experience abstinence in my own life. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Donna B. And Becca R., it's your turn to share.
Hey, it's Becca R. from Kentucky, recovered compulsive overeater. I'm, like others, grateful to be on the line this morning. And so much of the shares have just really hit home with me. But mostly just the promise that it gives in the end of the paragraph that it's a design for living that really works in rough going. And I have to be reminded that it's not, when I think about doing this thing, doing all of the things that I do for my recovery forever, it's overwhelming. It takes my breath away. I'm so naturally lazy, and it really paralyzes me. But when I think about doing it for the next 24 hours, just like when I put the food down for the next 24 hours, can I be reminded that for the next 24 hours, I do have a design for living? And what I've gotten to see is that through recovery, it has just become part of my existence. My phone does ring a lot. I am on the phone a lot. Right now I have a little baby, so I'm at home, and I have a lot of time to work with people on the phone and make outreach calls. And it just is. It just is part of my life and my routine, and I'm so grateful for that, because when I came in, I just thought, how in the world am I going to fit another thing in my life? There's no way. I can't do it all. But I keep it simple, and I just look at the next 24 hours ahead. I'm just really full of gratitude. Yesterday, my whole family was plagued by the stomach bug, and we cleared our schedules, and we were all home, and And it just, it was like, it was so intuitive. Like, of course, this is what you're going to do. You're going to cancel these things and you're going to be at home and you're going to serve your family and take care of yourself. And I'm just really, really grateful for the gift of recovery and for all of the shares this morning. With that, I pass.
Thank you very much, Becca R. My apologies, Judith R. We are out of time. We're going to transition into the next part of the meeting. And thank you, everyone, that was of service here today and with your shares of, you know, direction in this big book. It was very helpful for all of us here, I'm sure. So let's get started by closing with page 164 in our big book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. And then we'll follow that with a serenity prayer, but still stand by after the recording is ended. We will, in fact, go into transitioning to greeting newcomers. John Kay, are you ready to read that last page for us?
I certainly am, Millie.
Thanks so much.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.